Thanks, Eddie. I'm Brian, an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 25th of 2021. I have a home group, which is Tampa YPG here. And I am the service chair right now. I also have a sponsor who knows she is my sponsor. Hopefully, I call her every day incessantly. And I also sponsor others. I'm like super nervous to speak in front of people right now. Usually I'm like really good at talking in front of like a whole group of people, but there's something different when it's like a bunch of people that you've known and like gotten to know, you know, and this home group is very special to me. I've been in and out of AA for a really long time, and there's nothing like the sense of community that comes with being in Tampa YPG and being a home group member here, so thank you to everyone here. I'll start how I start out every single time I speak. Like, my childhood gets better like the longer I stay sober. You know, I grew up with two parents that like love each other to death. And I was really just like burdened with love a lot. And then I turned 5, you know? My dad got injured when I was really young. He's paralyzed from the waist down, or a little bit higher, but I kind of like threw like a really big wrench in my family. I have two older sisters who were kind of like out doing their own thing, and I was home alone. My dad was in the hospital for 2 years. My mom was taking care of him for pretty much all of those 2 years. Like, the nurses would make a bed for her in the hospital because they were like, this woman won't leave. And I was kind of just at home, you know? And there wasn't really much to do other than like sit there and like think about myself. And I think that's when like my alcoholism started, you know, just thinking about, I don't know, what a piece of shit I am. And, you know, why don't I have this? Or why doesn't my life look like this? And, you know, that was just like the start of it all. And I kind of just like withdrew from like everything. You know, I didn't want friends. I didn't want to know you. I wasn't invited to birthday parties, you know. I think there was like a birthday party in like 5th grade that like everyone in the whole class was invited to except for me. And like, I was like, I didn't care. Did not care. I would much rather be at home by myself. You know, and I thought that like everybody had these lives that they were just like born into. Like, everybody in this world was born and just knew who they were supposed to be. And like, I missed out on that. And like, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know how people knew who they were or what was going on. And I kind of just like was resigned to the fact that like I was nothing and like going nowhere. And I was like in 5th grade, like super dramatic, you know, like just making a whole mess of things. And we ended up moving to Florida when my mom got papers over here. Both my parents were in the military, so we got transferred over here to Florida. And I didn't know anybody here. And like, my whole family is over in Arizona. Most people know, like, I have a very, very large family. My mom has 7 siblings, and I have like 40 first cousins. And all of us lived within like a 5-mile radius of each other. So like, I didn't need to make friends because I didn't have to. Like, we were all at like someone's house, like after school or on the weekends, doing something, you know? And when I got here, I was like removed from that. And I really didn't have anything, you know? I hated my life. I hated, like, I resented my parents for moving us over here without like any notice, you know? My mom took me to Disney World. She was like, we're going to go to Disney World with the family. Everything's going to be great. And I was like, oh my God, like, we never get to do anything. Like, let's go do this, you know? Because we didn't really even have money to like go to Applebee's. So like, Disney World was like amazing. You know, I didn't even think it was a real place at first. And we get here and like, we spend the whole weekend here and like, we're driving everyone back to the airport. And my mom's like, all right, we're going to go see our new house now. Like, we live here. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like that. I remember just like crying myself to sleep like the entire ride home, because I was like, my whole life just changed. And again, like, I didn't make any friends. I didn't want to know anybody. Like, people that smiled, I hated you. Like, people that had, like, two parents, I hated you. People that, like, seemed like they just had things together, I hated you. So it was, like, a good majority of society I just didn't like, including myself. And I was, I think, like, 13 or something when I didn't take a first drink. My sisters were babysitting this house or house sitting for one of my mom's friends, and I was 13. They were there with their boyfriends, and they thought it was like a really funny idea to get me high. So they just like fed me a bunch of stuff and just like sat there and watched to see what I was gonna do. And like I was messed up. I remember thinking I was gonna throw up, and I just like stared at the toilet on my knees for like an hour. And then I like laid in bed and stared at like a screen because I couldn't figure out what to watch. I just stared at a screen for like 2 hours and just like no thoughts in my head. And I was like, oh, that was great. When can we do that again? You know? Just zombie, just staring, zoning out. And I tried to feel like that every single second that I could. I played soccer at this point for like school and club, so there wasn't like many opportunities for me to do that, but every single time like I had an opportunity, like I capitalized on it every single time. And then like at 14, I remember me and my friend were sleeping at my house, and we went in the back to get like some beers because my mom is an alcoholic. She's in the rooms. She's very angry drunk, and I'll just say that. Not a very nice person. And most normal people will like see that and be like, oh, you know, alcohol is bad. It makes people angry and throw things and hit people. You know, like my cousin, who's a very normal person and will have like one glass of wine and be like, oh my God, am I turning into an alcoholic like my mother? And me, I was like, I want to know what's so good about this. So we went and took those beers, and I drank some. It tasted like shit. I hated it. Didn't get drunk. I fell asleep, and I was like, why do people do this? And then when I was in high school, we ended up getting someone to get us some liquor. I don't know who was buying 14-year-olds liquor, but it happened. And we got like Fireball and Red Gatorade, and it was disgusting. But we drank like, my friends drank like normal people, like trying to get a buzz. And I remember drinking like half of the handle, like immediately. And I got so drunk. I was like wandering the streets. And I lived over in like the sticks. Like it was the sticks. My backyard was a cow pasture. And there's no street lights and rarely any cops. And I'm just wandering around this road. Just no thought in the world, just wandering. My friends are like chasing after me, yelling at me, freaking out because I'm like in the middle of the road. And then they bring me back in. I'm like throwing up everywhere. It looks like blood because we were drinking Red Gatorade. And like it was a mess. And I woke up the next morning and I was like, that was great. I felt great. I felt like so free. And like over the course of like my life, I just wanted to get that drunk again, like just to feel that freedom. And like, you know, there's other stuff that's a part of my story because alcohol, I mean, but alcohol stayed consistent throughout my entire life. You know, like alcohol was always there. It's always easily accessible. I can buy it anywhere. And even if I'm underage, I can find someone to buy it for me. Or there was this gas station where I lived that this guy like adored me, which was really weird looking back on it. But he gave me alcohol. And so, like, we were friends. And, you know, my life just, I couldn't see the consequences of my drinking while I was in it. Like, I couldn't see it. Like, I wasn't going to school. I ended up, like, stopping playing soccer, which was a very big part of my life. Like, I played it for 13 years. And I stopped playing soccer. I stopped going to school. I was hanging out with people I shouldn't have been hanging out with. And, you know, doing things I shouldn't have been doing. You know, and getting in trouble with, like, the cops a lot, you know. But thank God for Florida, because if you get arrested when you're underage, it doesn't really count. yeah, like, all of those things were happening, and I couldn't see it. I was like, I'm just having fun. Like, why can't you guys see that I'm just having fun? And like, I couldn't see the destruction that it was causing everybody else in my family too, and everybody in my life. You know, like over the course of my entire life, I always thought that like, people always leave me and they abandon me and like all this stuff, like bridges are burned and it's like, it's never my fault, you know? But I couldn't see that like my drinking and my actions were causing all of these things. I couldn't see it, you know? And I remember I was dragged to my first AA meeting when I was like 17, and it was after like a really bad breakup. You know, like this girl came up to me and was like, listen, you got to stop drinking and doing these things or we can't be together. And so I was like, no, I'm going to stop. I promise I'm going to stop. And I made it like 3 days, which was like really big for me to make it 3 days without anything, because I was shaking, I was sweating, things were coming out of me. And I remember calling my sister in the morning, and I was like, this sucks, I feel like shit, like all these things. And my sister was like a year sober at the time, and she goes, yeah, it's like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I was like, man, that makes so much sense. Like, that's exactly how I feel. And like, I had no clue that like she was just like giving me these AA seeds. Never like preaching to me. Like, my mom was she was years sober when I got sober, but like my mom and my sister never like preached AA at me. But whenever I was like really, really low, like that morning wake up where like all of a sudden you remember every horrible thing you've ever done in your life, that's when they would like say this like one thing where I'm like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. Yes. And then an hour later I'd be drunk. You know, like that window is so small and I could never just like do something in that window. And my sister asked me if I wanted to go to an AA meeting, and I was like, sure. What else do I have to do? I'm like 18 and my life is over, you know? And she takes me to this AA meeting, and it's like, the closest AA meeting to where I lived at the time was like 20 minutes away in like this garage where everyone's like smoking cigarettes, and it's a bunch of like old bald men with beards. And anyways, it was not my crowd of people when I was 17. And so I walk in there, and I remember just like crying. And like at the time, like actually in my life, I don't like crying in front of people. I hate it. Like, it's super uncomfortable to me, and I don't trust people enough to like cry around them. And for me to walk into an AA meeting and immediately start crying was like, looking back at it, like just now realizing that, is like super insane. That like immediately as I sat down, I just like, my body felt comfortable enough to just like let everything out. But apparently AA is not for you to just like sit there and tell everyone your problems in the middle of a meeting. So someone told me to be quiet and listen. More words were said than that, but that was the message I got. And I had walked out with a resentment against AA, and I drank for the next 3 years, you know. And I had there's no thought of like controlling and enjoying my drinking. Like, I didn't want to control it. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to enjoy it. And like by that time, it was like hardly even enjoyable anyways, because I was like waking up in places I didn't recognize. Like, it was, and I was like an everyday drinker when I was 18, you know, like, and I was drinking liquor every single morning, just, and I had to like take two drinks in order to get the third one down, you know, which is insane. And, you know, just like so many things were happening in my life that I couldn't realize. And actually last night at a meeting, I was thinking about like the moment I realized that like my drinking might not be normal. It was when I was drinking with one of my friends who drank just the way I did, you know. And I know we're not supposed to brand anybody, but like, he's drinking like I drink. We're hanging out all the time together, and he's like my barometer for, am I drinking too much? And we ended up getting like a case of beer one night, and we just wanted to have a few. He falls asleep because he has like work in the morning, and I end up drinking like the whole case to myself and like passing out. And the next morning he's like waking me up, and he's like, why'd you drink all that beer? And I was like, I don't know. He was like, why though? Like, there was no reason for you to drink all of that. And I was like, I don't know. You know, there's a part in the big book that talks about he has no more idea than you do why he took the first drink. None. You know, I just know that it's like an instinct. I need it. And once I have one, like, I need all of them until I pass out or run out. Most of the time it's pass out, because if I run out, I'm just going to get more. You know? And I ended up moving down to South Florida because Tampa was my problem. You guys were just way too crazy. My family was too crazy, and I just needed to move and get out of here, and everything was going to be okay. If anyone's been to South Florida, you know that is so not true. And I like spent a few days down there, and I was like, oh, it's been 2 years. Crazy, you know, living the same day over and over and over again. And I got kicked out of college. I was living at my dealer's house and doing very questionable things, you know. And like, I think that was like the things I felt worst about, like coming in here, you know, like feeling like a piece of shit. Like, yeah, I had like lost friendships and my family and all that stuff, but like the stuff I did when I lived down there was like what I regretted the most. And I just had like this extreme weight on me of like, I did those things. And like, I don't know, like I have like this selfish and self-centered thought that like I need to punish myself for these bad things that I've done. And the way that I punish myself is like by drinking and using more, which in turn hurts more people. Makes zero sense, but it makes sense in here. And I ended up overdosing a few times in rapid succession, and I hadn't spoken to my mom in like years at this point, and I was living at this house. My mother drives down, because the hospital called her, she was still my emergency contact, drives down from Tampa down to West Palm Beach in like 2 hours, and I hear this banging at the door, and so we think it's the cops, you know, naturally. So we're trying to, you know, move everything around, and someone opens the door, and I hear my mom's voice, and I was like, fuck, you know? And she goes, where's Brianna? And like, everyone just like was honest for the first time in their lives, you know? And was just like pointing their like arms over at me. And I was like, God damn it. And my stepdad was with her too, and he's like, I love him. He just passed away recently, but he was walking in. He's like a really awkward guy. He's walking in, and he like doesn't want to do anything because he was in recovery too. And he's just like picking stuff up and looking at it, and my mom's just yelling at me, and he's just like, huh, trying to look at like what everything is. And I was like, what is this motherfucker doing? And my mom goes, you have two options right now. You can get Baker acted, or you can go to treatment. And so naturally, being in a Baker Act twice before, I was like, I will go to a Baker Act. It's no brainer, you know? I can get drugs there. And so she drives me all the way back over to Clearwater and Baker Acts me. And like, while I was in there, I had like this come to Jesus moment where I was like, oh my God, I have figured it out. I know exactly what I need to do to get my life back together. I know exactly what I need to do to get my family back, and I'm gonna go back to school, and I'm gonna get a good job, and I'm gonna do all these things. And I was like cheeking meds when I was in the Baker Act too. Like, these are like my thoughts while I'm there. And like, when I was cheeking them, I like took all of them at once just to see what would happen. And I end up like face planning trying to get into my room. And if you've ever been in a Baker Act, you know there's like no doors, no nothing. So like you hear like the smack. And like they come in, like the nurses come in to get me, and like they thought I was trying to kill myself. So like I got an extra 7 days added on. And I was like, I wasn't trying to kill myself, I just wanted to get high. And they were like, yeah, that's not any better. So I end up staying there for like 10 days. My dad comes and picks me up. Bless his heart, because he has done so much for me that probably no other human being in this world would do for me. I love him to death. he picks me up, and I'm telling him about, like, all these great things I'm going to do, and he's like, you know, Bub, I just want, he calls me Bub. He's like, you know, Bub, I just want you to be happy, you know, it's all I want. It's all a father wants for his daughter is just to be happy. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm going to will myself into happiness. And I get home, and, like, I look in my, I had, like, made these shelves in the back of my bed frame to hide stuff in. And so naturally, like, I get home and I reach back there and I'm like, oh, there's stuff left back here. And, like, I was done within, like, you know, an hour of getting home, already back on the same cycle. And I end up overdosing again, you know, and the same cycle repeats and repeats and repeats. And I wake up in this, this baker act again. Because for some reason, like, every single time I drink, I end up in a loony bin. And I'm, like, in four-point restraints, and I'm, like, throwing up on myself. Not cute, you know? And, like, I remember, like, my first thought was, like, who changed me? You know, because I, like, didn't have my clothes on. Like, that was my first thought. Not, like, where am I or, like, what's going on? I was, like, who changed me? And then I start throwing up, and I, like, called for the nurse. And I was, like, where am I? She goes, if you ask me that one more time, I'm not answering anymore. And I was like, no, I'm lucid this time, I promise. And I was at Brandon Regional. And apparently I'd been there for like 3 days, just unconscious. Had no clue I was there for 3 days. I thought it had been like a few hours, maybe. And like nothing was different than like the day before that than any other day I had lived. It's the same thing. Just got a different result that time. And my dad picked me up. I was, if anyone knows where Brandon Regional is, I was like sitting on the side of Parsons, holding like my bag of stuff, just sitting on the side of the road. No cell phone, no wallet, no nothing. Just sitting there like, well, I hope someone comes and picks me up. And my dad pulls up and just like unlocks the door. Wasn't even looking at me. Could not look at me, couldn't speak at me. And like, it just broke my heart, like, every single time I think about his face, just not being able to look at me or talk to me, like, it just breaks my heart every single time. And that was the moment I realized, like, I couldn't take another drink again. I couldn't do it, you know. And he dropped me off at my sister's house or her apartment because he couldn't deal with me anymore. He's like, I don't know what to do. And my sister, she already packed a bag for me. She's like, I'm taking you to treatment. And I was like, okay. But then, like, on the way there, I was like, oh, no, we're going to treatment. So I'm, like, trying to open the door as we're driving and just causing a scene. We get there, and, like, I go to treatment, and I didn't know what to do to stay sober. I thought, like, I was just, like, going to go to treatment, hang out for a little bit, get a little couple of days under my belt and like be okay. That was like my conception of like getting and staying sober. And when I was there, they handed me like this big book, and I didn't read it. It sat there on my nightstand and held my drinks. But I remember just not wanting to talk to anybody, because when I'm sober, like, I'm just inherently angry at everybody and everything. And, like, one of my friends always talks about how I looked when I first came in the rooms, because I would sit in, like, the very back of the room next to no one and just, like, have my arms crossed like this and just a face that says, get the fuck away from me. Because I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to be a part of whatever you guys had here. You know, it was just miserable. And I had made friends with these two older guys because I don't know why, but, like, maybe my father raised me for like pretty much my whole life. My mom left when I was like 14 or 15, but and even before then, she wasn't really present. Anyways, my dad raised me like my whole life. So like, I just trust older men. I don't know what it is, but I kind of made friends with these two older guys there, and they're actually still sober. I still keep in contact with them. And they were like, hey, we're doing this meeting thing tonight down in, like the common area. You should come down and check it out. And I was like, is there going to be people there? And he was like, yeah, but, like, we're going to be there, so it's going to be okay. And I was like, I really don't want to. And he was like, well, just try one time. If you don't like it, you don't have to come back. So I was like, all right, whatever. So I go down there, and they're like reading all the readings that they read at like the AA meeting I went to years ago, and I was like, this shit again. And it was a bunch of people talking about like relapsing and like coming back and like trying to get back into the swing of things in AA, and like talking about all these things that they lost after leaving AA. And it wasn't like material things that they lost. It was like self-respect and like morals and like trust of people, like just things like that that they were talking about. And I was like, I get that, you know? And after the meeting was over, we closed, and Jay, the guy, comes up to me and hands me all the papers, and he was like, we're discharging tomorrow, you gotta chair this from now on. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, someone's gotta do it, you gotta chair from now on. And like, that was my introduction to AA, was just like chairing this meeting at the detox, like with people I didn't know, and like my egotistical self was like, oh, they think I'm important, you know? So obviously I did it every single day. God forbid I read the big book, but I was there every day to chair this meeting. And I got out, and same thing, man. I was just like hanging out in AA, you know? I would go to dinners and play cards and smoke cigarettes and do all these things, but like no AA was being done, none. I didn't have any service commitment. I wasn't sponsoring people. I think I chaired like one meeting or something. I don't know. I wasn't doing much, and like it showed, like I was so miserable. And then around like 9 months sober, I turned 21, and I was like, I think you guys made a really big deal about this. Like, I just had a really bad year. And I remember like coming home and like talking to my dad and like convincing him, and he's like, yeah, you know, you were really young. And I was like, yeah, I was. We should go get drunk, you know, and just like manipulating. And by that time, like everyone was so over my shit because I was just like miserable to be around and angry all the time and pissing a lot of people off. I called one of the people I knew from AA, and I was like, you know, I really don't think I'm an alcoholic. And he goes, you know what? Maybe. And I was like, you just co-signed. That's all I need. And that night, me and my dad went to the Wing House right by the stadium, naturally, on the rooftop. And my dad ordered like an entire bottle of Jaeger. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. I'm drinking with my dad. And then shortly thereafter, like a week later, I'm drinking every day again. I'm hiding liquor in my house. I'm stopping at the liquor store on the way to work so I don't shake. I'm stopping at the liquor, like the bar on the way home, so that way like I have some in me by the time I get home, and just trying to hide it from my dad, and like doing all these things all over again, you know? And every single morning, like I would wake up and think, okay, I'm gonna go back to AA today, and I'm really gonna try it this time. I'm gonna do these things. And then by the time I'm at work, I'm already like drunk. And like I couldn't understand what was going on, you know? And I was just hopeless. Like I wanted God to just like take me out, but he wouldn't let me. And for some reason, I ended up at an AA meeting one day. And like people always ask me like, oh, what happened that day that you came in? I don't know, dude. I don't know. I just know that God showed up, and I was not in any part of the actions or the way that they happened. I just know that I was able to show up to an AA meeting one day, and the same people that I had known for years were there, and they welcomed me back and gave me hugs, and I was just like sobbing again. And I really wanted to stay sober because I knew, like step one says, like the powerlessness over alcohol, right? I knew that I couldn't take so much as one drink, and I knew that it doesn't matter how much I want to stay away from that drink, I'm going to do it again. On my own resources, my own devices, I'm going to do it again. Like I have no choice in the matter, you know? And the unmanageability part, I did not know, continues throughout your sobriety. If you don't know that yet, good luck. You know, life in sobriety has been truly a gift to me, you know, and going through the steps with somebody else. I've been able to go through the steps with a few people since I've been sober, and like each person has their own perspective on things, and I appreciate every single one. And I really was able to get in touch with like a power greater than myself. You know, I always knew that God was there. And I grew up Catholic. My family would have cenacles every Sunday because they're like really Catholic. So every Sunday we would go to one person's house and pray the entire rosary. And then like my parents would get shit-faced after. But like I was no stranger to like God or the concept of God. I just thought that he like wanted nothing to do with me. And I thought that like God was going to punish me and come down and smite me and like all of these things, mainly because I hated myself and I thought that I should be like punished. And God's not like that. You know, I was able to sit down with another alcoholic and talk about like all the times that God did show up in my life, and like I had no idea because I wasn't looking. I was too busy thinking about myself that I couldn't see God in these moments and in these people. And you know, I was able to just have the freedom that alcohol gave me. You know,